It's my understanding as well, once the prosecution is completed, that information's available, and I'm not aware of instances where that has been withheld.
Okay, so it is during the time when it's pending.
It's particularly in a situation where you've got a lengthy investigation and delayed a trial. Those can be very valuable months in a civil situation.
So I was then going to suggest that we allow that as a matter of course, and then,
your suggestion
then
is
permit the other one, either the DA or the court allows it.
I would expect in the type of situation Mr. Penn is referring to, it might be appropriate in that situation under the language of this bill to go to the judge and either prevent the filing of the civil case until such time as it is completed, or at least the formal discovery in the civil case. Once the civil case is filed in Oregon now, under the Chief Justice's rules, he's pushing us to get our cases tried within a year. So at least as a civil lawyer, I would probably not file the case until such time as the prosecution was completed. But I would want the ability to, particularly in a dram shop case, get out to that tavern, question people, see if they saw the defendant there, and build that case, because that portion of the case is not necessarily as critical to the criminal prosecution, particularly if you've got a blood alcohol content of 0.25 or something. It doesn't really matter for the criminal prosecution where the individual was drinking. It's critical in the civil case. The only other comment I would make, Mr. Penn indicated that oftentimes the criminal defendants don't have the financial resources. Oftentimes, though, they're dealing with insurance companies who would come in and protect them in the civil case, and they have that access to the information if they get it through from the defendants. So,
well, I think we can work out some sort of compromise area that we can try to get as much reasonable information to people who are preparing for civil cases, and I think there needs to be some safeguard somewhere along the line about the discovery process interfering, and maybe we can work out something that that is a benefit to both parties through this vehicle.
One other question, and this is just a wording. This permits access to this information in any criminal prosecution.
Well, we've already decided that we're going to fix that up. Frankly, you have to fix it up, or you draft another bill.
No. But that's not my question. The prosecution, as I understand it, is once you've decided to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
What about information developed during the investigatory phase, before you decide to prosecute? Wouldn't the civil trial lawyer want access to that information too? That's developed before. Mm-hmm. Prosecution formally commences.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And so should not, if we're going to talk about that, shouldn't we broaden this to include information developed during that investigatory phase?
Mm-hmm. I think that's their intent.
I don't think that's what the bill does.
In that Dram Shop Act, you would really need that.
But technically a criminal prosecution doesn't begin until you've
filed
the charges, right?
Right.
Well, the fact is that Section 2 has got to be rewritten entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got the whole thing of Section 2.
Got
to be redone in some way. It's different. Doesn't do what I think the requesters really necessarily.
Sure. It's certainly not our intent to do anything to impede a criminal prosecution. Your comment about the victim is going to have to make a choice, we would hope not, because the people need to be protected as well. And so we're certainly not attempting to get in the way of that.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate that for the record. Thank you, Board.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else to speak to Senate Bill 372 who hasn't had a chance to? Thanks very much. Let's move ahead then to Senate Bill 434. We've got a long list of folks to sign up here. Let's hear from the sponsors of the bill first. Charlie and Jeff.
Once again, I'm Jeff Foote, practicing attorney in Portland, and I'm president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers, and this was a bill that was introduced in the Senate at our request. What I'd like to do, just very briefly, is I provided some information for the committee by way of background, and want to explain at least what our association's interest in the issue is and sort of how we get to the point where we are now, both constitutionally and with the ethics rules. Our association has passed a fairly strong resolution on solicitation of clients, which I've included in the materials for the committee at our summer convention in August of 1989. The concern that the association has, quite frankly, is the image that the public is can develop of lawyers when the we see as much solicitation for cases as we do. We think that it's demeaning to the profession. We think that it can cause some disrespect for the law and for the civil justice system. And that's kind of where we're coming from. Historically, any kind of lawyer advertising or solicitation was forbidden by the ethics rules. And that was true up until 1977, when the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Bates versus State Bar. It was an Arizona case, which was the first case which allowed any kind of lawyer advertising. There have been a number of cases since then which have discussed the fact that the lawyer advertising is is constitutionally protected speech, commercial free speech, and as things developed, there became marketing in phone books, television, radio, and I think kind of a latecomer to the scene was this direct mail advertising. Direct mail advertising would be actually writing a letter to an accident victim, informing the victim that you're aware that they were involved in such and such an accident, or and that you are an attorney and that you can represent them, they have certain rights, and this sort of thing. The Oregon State Bar passed a committee, or appointed a committee, to investigate this, and that committee was recommending to the bar, and I believe the bar would have passed, an outright prohibition on direct mail advertising. In the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Shapiro versus Kentucky Bar Association, where in a Justice Marshall opinion, he indicated that direct mail advertising was permissible commercial free speech, and that took the wind out of the sails of the bar, at least in banning this type of advertising. Since then, the bar has passed various disciplinary rules that have been approved by the Supreme Court, requiring that people using this method of soliciting clients mark the solicitation with the words advertisement on the bottom. There is another proposal which is passed which would require that language to be, I think, in bolder type in red letters, and that's presently before the Supreme Court. Now, the problem is, from our perspective, is that this is somewhat demeaning to the profession and it causes a disrespect to the profession. Flipping it over, it's our belief that it causes an unnecessary intrusion into the privacy of accident victims, particularly at a time when they're, I suppose, suffering the most. And I will relate one example, and I've told the individuals involved, I will not disclose their names, they didn't want their privacy intruded upon, but husband and wife situation where both of them are rather prominent attorneys and public attorneys here in the state of Oregon. The husband was involved in a single car accident where their only child was killed. And within a couple of weeks of that accident, they began receiving letters from various attorneys soliciting, in effect, the estate of this young child to sue the husband to bring this type of a claim. Now, at the time, they were aghast that this sort of thing could happen. They were angry, they were mad, they were hurt, they were devastated. And yet, a year or two later, as they look back at the letter, they said, well, the letter itself, as I look at it now in sort of the cold light of day, was not all that offensive. And so timing is a problem. If within a couple of weeks of a serious accident, they can receive this sort of thing, it can cause an unnecessary problem. Now, our provision, or the bill that we're proposing here, does not ban direct mail advertising. It doesn't limit access to this information. And all it does is cut off the access through the Department of Motor Vehicles. These reports are still available through the police agencies. As a matter of fact, that is the way in which most attorneys in the state will get an accident report when they're involved in a claim. They'll write to the investigating agency, they'll pay a fee, and they'll receive the accident. What has happened is there's I know of one company, there may be more, that actually purchases the accident reports en masse from the Department of Motor Vehicles and sell those to various law firms who then take the information from those reports and do direct mail advertising using the benefits of the computer age. I've, again, attached a couple of examples to my materials. I noticed that one of the opponents to our bill has also included some examples of what his law firm does. What this bill would do simply would be to cut off the access from the Department of Motor Vehicles to the accident reports for commercial purposes. It does not make them privileged or confidential or private in any way. It just prohibits the use of them or the access to the Department of Motor Vehicles for commercial purposes. And by commercial purposes, we're really dealing with this type of a situation, somebody using the names off of those reports for some sort of commercial solicitation, be it lawyers, body shops, or what have you. It is not intended in any way to cut off the legitimate access to this information, such as from a news gathering organization that might be doing a story on the case or something like that. The only amendment that we would suggest is one that was also submitted with my materials, and that would be to add a separate section which would make the obtaining of these information for commercial purposes a Class A misdemeanor. As we looked at the bill, we realized there was no real enforcement tool, and we certainly don't want to place the Department of Motor Vehicles in a situation where they have to quiz people that are asking for information in terms of what the purposes are for and that sort of thing. We don't think that's appropriate, so we would suggest that particular amendment. We don't believe that this is in spite of what you may hear, that there's no, there, in my opinion, there are no constitutional problems with what we're attempting to do. We're not banning this type of solicitation. We don't like it, but we're not banning it. We're not cutting off the access to police reports. Those are still available through the investigating police agency. Quite frankly, what we're doing is we're making it more difficult for this type of solicitation to occur, and we think that the public is better served if we can do that. So that's the purpose of the bill. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Questions? Committee members have looked at the drafting of the bill. I hope we see what we're doing here. Anything else on sponsors of the bill?
Yes,
Senator Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is, so it is more difficult to get this from the police agency, I assume?
Well, it's, in a police agency, I mean, a typical letter from myself would be, you know, dear so-and-so, I represent X victim who was in a motor vehicle accident such and such a date at such and such a location, and through that information they can find the appropriate police report and send it to me. And what's happening here is an attorney's office would simply get a stack of accident reports and write down the names of the victims and perhaps tailor their computerized letter accordingly. I'm not certain that they would be able to write to, say, the Oregon State Police and say, send me every police report for the last 2 months or something like this. They may attempt to do so, and maybe the bill ought to be expanded to prohibit the police agencies from making these available for commercial purposes. The starting point in any investigation of a personal injury auto case is the police report. They generally contain the names and addresses of any witnesses. A pretty good investigation of what happened, although in more recent years with budgetary concerns, there aren't as many police reports filed. I believe they're only filed generally now in situations where there is an obvious injury at the scene. So that the people who are getting these letters are the ones that are in probably worse physical shape than otherwise. Now, there, if you look at the materials that these various law firms are sending out, you'll see a lot of representations that are not necessarily unique to them. For example, some of the materials say we don't charge a fee on the first 10,000 medical bills. Well, the first 10,000 medical bills is PIP coverage, and no attorney charges a fee on, you know, recovering PIP benefits, because quite frankly, the attorney had nothing to do with recovering them. It may have suggested to the client that by buying a policy, they are, you know, they have certain rights, and their insurance company will automatically pay the bills. But I, as an attorney, didn't do that. The client did that when they bought the insurance policy. So it would be improper to charge a fee anyway. So
can we do a truth in advertising through the bar?
There is a truth in advertising resolution. The one that I attached, the OTRA resolution, was adopted, I believe, exact language or very similar language by the Oregon State Bar. And it provides, it's a condemnation, really, of attorneys who misrepresent what it is that they're providing. And the bar has, on occasion, investigated various attorney solicitations to determine whether there are misrepresentations there. But it's, quite frankly, it's a difficult job for the bar when the representations are as general as they are. And part of the problem is you a number of attorneys will say, I'm more experienced in such and such an area. But the term experience could mean just about anything. And, or, you know, I handle such and such cases. And it is confusing for the public. It's sort of, the downside of the making this available information available to the public about various legal services and that sort of stuff is it can be very confusing about where to go, what attorneys to go to, and that sort of thing. And we believe that the direct mail advertising is really one step too far, and then in terms of intruding on the victim and invading their privacy, and for that reason we think that this bill is appropriate.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Charles Williamson, again, OTLA. I just had one point to add, I think, and that is that in anticipation of what the opponents to this bill will say, and that is that we're not trying to interfere with the freedom of speech of anybody. It's just that if you agree with us that this sort of solicitation is demeaning to the courts, the legal system, and the profession, the state does not have to aid these people by providing these records in doing that. The state does not have to provide the source of the plaintiffs to them.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Senator Bond.
Madam Chair, if the major purpose is just to deal with the solicitations, couldn't the bill be written with a more narrow target so you don't get into a question of what other commercial purposes might be netted with it?
Well, you keep running afoul of the Supreme Court Shapiro decision. We have said, Senator Bunn, that we're not intending to interfere with the right of the press or other people to get these for non-commercial purposes, for legitimate public purposes, but for the purpose of approaching people in automobile accidents to advertise to them is clearly commercial.
Okay, but because it's not... not necessarily limited to that verbiage. When I went through the police academy, we were told the importance of the investigation as it related to the insurance company at a later point in time, since we would often be the first person on the scene. That information could arguably be denied to an insurance company, couldn't it, under the verbiage?
It's certainly not our intention to do so. And again, the insurance agency would generally go to the police department involved because they would, you know, that would be the more appropriate.
I want to interrupt and say, catch Senator Bonner, he's been excused on another meeting, to say that we're talking about DMV records only, not police records. So they still have access to go and could get, for whatever reason, they could actually advertise commercially if you wanted to use a police record. Couldn't you? I mean, to go to the police?
If you could get the police to give you everybody that had an accident every day, you could
do it. So that's not, so if you wanted to do that, what we're talking about here is the general DMV list.
But to answer your question, it certainly...
At least that's what
our intention.
I believe the people to believe that that's what we're doing.
Okay, but now these are... But the whole question is, reports submitted by police officers.
But only at the DMV level. So you still can go, doesn't change the police officer's role at all, except that you couldn't pick them all up DMV in a computer printout, is what we're saying.
So we're just making it more inconvenient to carry out the practice.
I think that's the reality of what's being proposed here.
Okay, aren't we at the same time, though, making it more inconvenient for an insurance company to carry out? I guess that would be different because the insurance company doesn't need whole list of them.
Yeah, and they're also servicing their own individuals, whoever they might be. But
presumably, the insurance agency, when they're notified of a claim, would contact the police agency involved for the report. They wouldn't have any use that I could see for all the police reports in the state. And that's not our intention to cut off their access, just as it's not our intention to cut off the access from an attorney who writes the police agency and tells them that I represent such and such a client. I'd like to see a report about that accident.
I think the drafting is very convoluted, and we need to sort of keep that in mind. I think Senator Bunn has another question.
Okay. Well, we're also getting into the language removed on confidentiality, and I guess I would want to be certain that there is protection now, that you don't have a sheriff's office say, no, that record's not available to an insurance company. They haven't never needed to provide it in the past because they could get it from DMV.
Sure.
I just want to be real sure in the process of doing this, we don't cut off some other avenue that's a valid concern.
We'd sure be happy to work with anybody from that industry to assure them that that's not what our intention is. I think this is one area, and probably one of the few areas, where the trial lawyers and the insurance companies would probably be in agreement. I've seen correspondence where insurance companies receive complaints from their insureds because they've received this sort of thing.
Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, in bills where we've tried to restrict access to these records, it seems that the DMV in the past has talked about wanting to sell these lists to a lot of people for a lot of situations. I would just be curious to know if they sell these lists for, besides the insurance considerations, but for other commercial situations as well.
But automobile repair people.
I think they do, Madam Chair. In fact, I think there is a draft in LC circulating right now that would prohibit DMV from doing just such.
Okay. Why don't you come up and answer that question? We have someone from DMV here. And before we get into the other witnesses, there are a long list of public witnesses, which I want to get to in the next half an hour. Just to sort of clarify the record.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carl Kruger, representing the Motor Vehicles Division. We currently sell right now to really only two or three people that buy bulk police accident reports. For 1990, we sold over 100,000 reports. And a majority of those were purchased by no more than three individuals.
Senator Bunn.
Were those two or three people, did you have any way to know whether those were vendors who would resell those? I'm getting someone shaking their head in the back.
One of the three.
Okay, so the fact that there were three, those three may represent vendors who then sell to auto repair shops, attorneys, insurance companies, a whole range of clients.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, that's our understanding, that's what they do.
And you have currently no criteria on what the information is used for?
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, no, we don't.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks very much, Carl. We'll be seeing you again, I'm sure.
Madam Chair, a comment.
Senator Hanby.
To Mr. Foote. Your earlier comment, Jeff, about the abusiveness of receiving something like this in the direct mail, I can only think of something a little more objectionable, and that would be to sell it to some telemarketing firm when they're doing this.
Okay, let's move on to the people who've come to testify. We have some accident victims from Grand, who've come from a ways, from Grand Ron, from Bend and Eddyville. So I'm not I'm not sure that they are here on behalf of the opposition of the bill. So I guess I need to know whether I want to call them first. Arva Ford, and maybe you could come up together. Thomas Jackson. Want to make sure that you all can come up and get yourself situated. And yes.
Woman in the front row is having difficulty hearing.
Yeah, I maybe we can help her come, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Howell, and these are four accident victims that have notified me they wanted to testify regarding this bill from various areas of the state.
Right. And thank you. And that's Sandra Thomas, too, right?
Yes.
You're Sandra Thomas. Why don't we take you first, then, Sandra, as long as everybody else gets situated. And tell us your story and tell us what your problems were and a little bit about what your circumstances were. Thank you.
There it is.
Yeah, we need your name and for the record, please, before you talk. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Sandra Thomas. I'm from Eddyville, Oregon. And I was involved in an accident on June 9th, 88. During that time, I was in intensive care for a week. During that week, my husband was involved with the insurance companies and everybody else. And during that time, he had found us an attorney. During that time, when I had gotten out of the hospital and was able to deal with things a little better, I spoke to this attorney who also wanted me to sign on. And at that point in time, he told me that he was already $1,000 in debt with me. And I looked at him and I said, that's impossible. I haven't even hired you yet. My husband had only gotten the attorney for himself, not for me. I had discussed with him on many matters on the accident, mainly what he was going to charge, what his priorities were. My main priority was to get my medical bills paid. It didn't matter if I received anything or not, but to get the medical bills paid, which my bills were over $70,000. This attorney told me that he wanted to charge me 33% interest or what is that, right? And that my medical bills did not come first, that his fee came first. So at that point in time, I told him no, I did not want him. And he in turn dropped my husband and told me that I was never to come to his office again, was the letter that I'd gotten into the mail. With the other letters that I had gotten in the mail, I then went through the attorneys and found Thomas B. Howell, who was interested in my case and not in his own pocketbook, which is what I was mainly concerned about, because I was not going to be receiving anything. My bills were. And he is not to get any money unless my bills are paid. And that, to me, says that the attorney is going to work for me and not for his own pocketbook. And the attorneys that were local to me all wanted it for their own pocketbook. And the only way that I could find out people that were not local to me was by this advertising.
So you were dealing basically with your local attorneys available to you in Eddyville?
Which was in Newport at that particular time.
Okay.
But I did not have a Portland phone book, you know, with me. I was not able to go out and research. But by this advertising, I was able to go through this and decide from there on who I wanted. And I had spoke with many attorneys during that time.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Tom Jackson?
Yes. My name is Thomas Jackson. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm representing my daughter, who became a victim of an automobile accident last December, a year ago. And at that time, I've, a little bit about myself, I've been married for 22 years, four kids, and I've never had to deal with lawyers or attorneys in any way. So I lacked a lot of understanding in that. And whenever something like this takes place, it's quite a shock. My daughter came close to losing her life. I'm still affected by it, actually. During that time, it's a lot goes on. You know, it's nothing else matters but your daughter. So obviously, I wasn't thinking about attorneys or anything else. The company that I work for, when I went back to work, my bosses talked to me, and they made comment. And when I began to ask questions, I don't know, what do you do? They asked me if I had contacted an attorney yet. And I said no. And they said, you might want to call ours. Well, I did that. And that attorney, in our conversation, stopped me and asked me what the insurance company's name was that we were involved with. And I told him, he stopped me, he happened to be representing that company. And I was suddenly faced with, I don't know, you know, who to go to or what to do. Bend, Oregon isn't a real large city, you know. And I realized that I might want to go out of town. I knew that I needed to do something for my...